Hey, Bruiser Buddies, this is Wrestling Nostalgia with Dave Dynasty.
Before we dive into the episode, make sure you hit subscribe on the podcast platform you're listening on. Also, follow me on X at The Dave Dynasty and subscribe on YouTube by looking up Nostalgic Dave Dynasty. You can also buy one of my shirts at ProWrestlingTees.com/TheDaveDynasty. Now, enjoy the show.
Welcome to 1 hour of the toughest, roughest wrestling you'll ever see.
That's right, Dick the Bruiser said it all.
The big question, have you got the endurance? Have you got the brains to get past the excellence of execution?
The reason why Axe and myself were put on this earth is to demolish people.
Bobby Heenan, that is a very good-looking sport coat you've got on.
Yeah, and I paid for mine. Mine isn't government issue.
Yellow, everybody. Lance Russell and Dave Brown right along ringside. By golly, we're ready to go with another big week of championship wrestling.
Greetings, wrestling fans, and welcome to Wrestling Nostalgia. I'm your host, Dave Dynasty. Thank you for joining me for yet another episode of Classic Wrestling Goodness. My guest on this episode is Shane Russell, the son of legendary Memphis announcer Lance Russell. We talk about growing up with his father, Dave Brown, the Dream Machine, Jimmy Hart, and much, much more. That interview's coming up soon, so stick around. Now, if you listen every week, and I do hope you do, last episode I said that on this one I would have Flying Fred Curry. And what I did was I flip-flopped Shane and Fred because I want a little more time to try to fix some of that audio that's going on with Fred Curry's interview. There's some static, some connection issues. I'm cleaned it up some. I'm trying to work on it a little more. I'm just really trying to get it as best I can. I don't know that I can do much more. I don't know how good I get it. We are going to release it no matter what. But I wanted another week to tinker with it. So that's why I switched the interviews. But that's okay because this one's a great one. And we're going to take a break. And when we come back, we'll have my guest, Shane Russell. So stick around.
Hey, you bums. We have to take a quick break.
Filsinger Games is a tabletop cards and dice game company that has enjoyed success for over 3 decades. Their first game was Champions of the Galaxy and was released in 1986. Champions of the Galaxy is a tabletop game that features professional wrestling over 100 years in the future. Humans, aliens, and monsters battle in the Galactic Wrestling Federation for belts. Legends of Wrestling features officially licensed wrestling cards featuring stars like Ted DiBiase, Jimmy Snuka, Harley Race, and many, many more, including game sets for independent promotions. Each match takes place in real time. The action is fast and furious, and all the things that happen in pro wrestling, like cage matches, outside interference, three-man tag matches, they also happen in the games. You have the opportunity to run your own wrestling promotion involving either real-life stars or fictional characters of the future, or you can mix and match both. Visit FilsingerGames.com for more information and to order the games today. That is Filsinger Games, FilsingerGames.com to order now. If you like horror movies, be sure to check out Dave Dynasty and Ike Isaacs on the Listen to Their Screams Horror Podcast. It is available on all podcast platforms and on social media at Listen to Screams. That is Listen, the number 2, and Screams. Hey ho, everybody. Subscribe to the Pinhead Pod, the Ramones fan podcast, bringing you interviews, news, deep dives, and much more. Look it up on your favorite podcast platform. That is Pinhead Pod.
We're back on Wrestling Nostalgia.
And welcome back to Wrestling Nostalgia. This time I'm being joined by Shane Russell, the son of the great announcer Lance Russell. Shane, how are you?
I am doing great, Dave. Let me start out by doing what Dad did for 30 years every Saturday morning on Channel 5 in Memphis, Tennessee. Hello again, everybody. Shane Russell and Dave Dynasty right along ringside. By golly, for another big day of the Wrestling Nostalgia Podcast.
I like that. I'm going to have to clip that and use that in the intro.
You know, I think when I've listened to a few of your podcasts, Dave, and by the way, they are great. Highly recommend them.
Oh, well, thank you.
You actually have a clip of Dad doing that.
I do. Yeah. Yeah. I had to put him in there. You know, some of all the stuff in the opening clip is important stuff to me. People that I'm huge fans of. Some of my favorites. So yeah, your dad clearly up there. Because I love Memphis wrestling, and when I think Memphis wrestling, more than any wrestler, I think of your dad. So
Lance Russell and Dave Brown were the two consistents throughout the years. There are many that came through, but they were the two consistent people there.
That's right. And your dad he's from Memphis, right? Born and raised, everything, right?
Well, he wasn't born there. He actually was born in Little Rock, Arkansas, but he moved there when he was three. Up to Michigan, and his dad was in the car business. So then they ended up moving to Dayton, Ohio, and that's where he met my mom. And as they say, the rest is history from there. They eventually ended up down in Jackson, Tennessee. We had a bunch of relatives down there, and Dad went down there actually for a job and ended up getting into the radio business down there, and so he started from there and went to Memphis.
Yeah. Well, before we get into all the business, you mentioned your mom, right? They were married how long? 60 something years, 60, right?
67 years. Yeah. Woo. She passed away the day before their 68th wedding anniversary.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And that's unbelievable.
Long time.
A long time. And like you said, he went to Jackson, worked for the radio. And how did he transition over then to TV? Because he start working at TV there in Jackson?
Yeah, he did. He was on. I can't remember the name of the station he was there, but he did some voiceovers there and did some other things, play by play. He did play by play his whole life. He did everything from all the major sports, football, baseball, basketball. He did boxing. He did wrestling. This was all up even when he was in Ohio and everywhere else he did. He's always had a love for that.
Yeah.
So then he was on a station in Jackson, Tennessee, and he got an opportunity to move to Memphis and be one of the main DJs there with a gentleman you may remember as Wink Martindale.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yep. So he and Wink Martindale were one of the main DJs, along with Dewey Phillips, who, if you know anything about Elvis Presley, you'll know Dewey Phillips. And George Klein, none other than George Klein, who was also a good friend of Elvis. But they all were disc jockeys back in the early days. I'm talking, probably 57, 58, somewhere right in there is when he moved to Memphis.
Yeah.
And it was probably 2 or 3 years later, they had an opening on the TV side. And Dad always wanted to be out back in the TV business. So he moved over into the TV business and did some sales there. And then he moved into programming and was promoted to director of programming in about 62, 63, right in there.
Yeah. And we're talking at that time, I mean, TV still relatively in its infancy. I mean, it's not, not a in every home kind of thing. It's still, growing and really starting to catch fire.
Exactly. And Dad was just born to do TV. He just had a great mind for it. And then they approached him about, the wrestling program. It didn't actually originate at Channel 13, which was a WHBQ there, RKO General Station. But it came over to them, and Dad was looking around for somebody to do the play-by-play, and he thought, well, I'll do it until I can find somebody because he's got the experience. Well, 40-something years later?
Yeah. Well, you mentioned that he had done some other sports and different things. Was he always just a big sports fan, through his entire life?
Always a huge sports fan. He loved everything. He was avid golfer, avid fisherman, wasn't very good at fishing, but he loved to fish. We spent many a day on the lake just trying to catch bass or brim or crappie or whatever. But he just loved all the sports. And of course that love fell down on me too. And I'm exactly the way he was.
Yeah. And you mentioned, right, he started doing more or less out of necessity, he started doing the pro wrestling company, but was he a fan at all of pro wrestling prior to?
Loved wrestling. His dad used to take him back in Michigan and Ohio to some of the local matches up there. So yeah, he knew it well. And that's why he did. He actually did some in Jackson, Tennessee, some of the live shows there and a few things on TV there. And then he came down to Memphis and started it there. But, you know, the one thing, Dave, that I try to make sure people understand, the one really unique thing about Dad in the wrestling business was not only did he know the product, but he also knew TV. He was a TV mm-hmm. guy from, you know, his program director. He made the decisions on what came on TV and what didn't come on TV on WHBQ. In fact, I don't know if you know this or not, but it was his idea to move the wrestling program from late at night to the 11 o'clock time slot on Saturday morning. You know, he of course he gets all the ratings and sees the shares and all that. And he said, you know, there's nothing on for adults at 11 o'clock on Saturday morning. It's our call cartoon. He said, why don't we move the wrestling program to 11 o'clock and we'll pick up a lot of the adults. Well, as you probably know, Dave, it skyrocketed. I mean, the share was unbelievable back in those days.
Yeah.
And it was just a huge success story.
Yeah. And you mentioned, we mentioned a little bit in the opening, Dave Brown. Right. A few years after he started calling wrestling regularly, he started the partnership with Dave Brown that lasted for decades. But how close, what were Dave and Lance like away from wrestling, away from calling the matches? Were they good friends away from the studio?
They till the day my dad passed away, they were just very, very good friends. As Dave, he tells everybody, he goes, we worked together for 40 years and we never had an argument or a crossword with one another in all that time. To this day, when I go back to Memphis and visit, I call Dave up and we'll go have lunch with Jerry Lawler and Jerry Calhoun. And I think they meet every Thursday and they call it the Liars Lunch. But they're nice enough to let me join them and reminisce about the old days and get some talking about some good Lance Russell stories. But so they were just really good friends, Dave.
Yeah. I mean, and it's like you felt that on TV, right? You could feel that how comfortable they were together, how much, you know, they knew of each other. And they both, what, you know, was important in wrestling at that time, they both brought a seriousness to it, right? You trusted them because they were the guys talking to you, calling these matches. They were the ones on every week's show, no matter if the wrestlers changed. So they trusted you, and one of the great things about Memphis is they protected that trust that we had in them.
Yeah. You know, you're very astute. You've picked it up great because I tell people this everywhere I go. If I do any kind of wrestling convention or show or anything, people will come by and they'll talk to me about Lance. They'll share stories, but the one thing I hear more than anything else, Dave, they always say, you know, your dad was just like my grandfather telling me, explaining to me what was going on TV, or he was like my dad, you know, and that's what made Dave and Dad so good is that they were able to communicate with the fans on TV and at the studios and they made them believe everything. If they said it happened by God, you know, that's just the way they were.
Yeah, and you brought up Jerry Lawler, obviously, right? You know, the king of Memphis, king of wrestling. And obviously, Lance and Jerry had obviously a great working relationship. I mean, they worked together again for decades. And hand in hand, very loyal to each other. But tell us again, also in the same vein, what was Lance and Lance and Jerry, what were they like away from the ring? Because again, there's almost like an age difference there. I have to say, it would kind of be a different kind of relationship than what Lance and Dave had a little bit.
I tell you, it was it wasn't the same relationship as Dave, but th there was so much respect that they both gave each other. It was very evident. Even to this day, Jerry Lawler, when he talks about Lance Russell, he says, if it wasn't for Lance Russell, there would be no Jerry Lawler. I mean, that's just so, I'm sure you know the story about how Jerry got into the business. You know, he sent
Yeah.
pictures into Dad, and Dad saw him and really liked them and brought Jerry down and showed his pictures, introduced him to Jackie Fargo, and Jackie took him under his wing from there. And so, but the relationship stayed. It was, I did a little paragraph for Mark James, one of Mark James's book, and I did it, you know, talking about my dad and Jerry's relationship. And I said it was almost like a father son. Dad was, when he announced Jerry's name, you know, coming down the aisle to the match, it was almost like he was so proud, you know, like a son coming to the ring. And that's kind of the way it was, Dave. You know, that's the way their relationship was.
Yeah, I mean, like you said, right, very literally, Lance, helped Jerry get started in wrestling. But they also, what any great wrestler will tell you is, right, the announcers are what help get you over, right? If their calling of the match, their description of things, their enthusiasm, whatever it might be, helps sell what you're doing in the ring, helps get that over. And so many decades together, I mean, Jerry Lawler, the biggest thing in Memphis, and you how much of that's because of Lance Russell and his calling, and and everything. And even though Lance endured and Jerry Lawler, the banana nose stuff in the early on things like that. Did your dad ever, did he ever have any problem with some of the nose jokes? Because
No, I did though.
yeah, well, because obviously Lawler did the banana nose. Jimmy Hart had a Lance Russell's nose song or whatever it was.
Oh
So
yeah.
so
Well, the only reason I did, Dave, was because, you know, it started back when I was in grade school, junior high and high school, when Lawler started that. And unfortunately, or fortunately, the one attribute I picked up of my dad is the nose. So I was known as Banana Nose Junior off through junior high and high school. So, but you know, nobody messed with me, only because they knew that I knew people that could come back and hurt them if I needed them to.
that's right. And we spoke about Lance and the seriousness, right? The respectability that he brought to it.
Right.
And we talked about how they protected that. And one thing that was kind of protected about it was the physicality with Lance was protected, right? You didn't see all the time wrestlers becoming physically involved with Lance. They didn't put their hands on him, whatever, but there were a few instances.
There
And well, I want to see what Lance is, what he said, talk to you or talk to anybody about, particularly a couple, but particularly one, 1981, the Dream Machine,
Oh yeah, that's the most
roughing up
classic.
Lance. Yeah, because it was, pretty very physical. And everything else. What did Lance think of that? That whole thing happening?
Well, I got two stories for you on that. One is when it happened, you know, after it happened, he came home and he's and of course I saw it on TV. I wasn't there that day. And I said, "Dad, what in the world?" He goes, "Shane," he goes, "as God is my witness, I'm telling, I don't think Troy Dream Machine knew what he was doing. He was in such a rage. He was just grabbing anybody he could. And he just grabbed me. Even Jimmy Hart, you know, after it was over, he even said, "Oh my God, I'm sorry, Lance. I don't know what got into him. He didn't know what he was doing," and all that. Later in life, though, you know, and Dad, my dad lived with my wife and I in the last years of his life. He was, you know, he was suffering from some early onset dementia and having trouble remembering things. And I asked him about that again, and he looked at me like, "What are you talking about?" I showed it to him on YouTube, and he says, "I can't believe that happened. I don't recall that at all." Oh, but
Well, at the end,
that was a big shock to everybody. Yeah.
yeah, it was so rare that it really just was so impactful.
Yeah.
And then
The only other
the
times I remember, of course, Bill Dundee slapped him one time. I don't know if you remember that, but
yeah.
The one that I thought was really going to be bad was when he and Tojo got into it. When Dad grabbed the hammer, I don't know if you remember.
Yeah,
that.
Yeah. I do remember that.
Hey, I may only get one lick in, Tojo, but it's going to be a good one.
Yeah. Well, and then another instance that very famous that most people remember is in '85 when Jimmy Hart dumped the bag of flour on Lance.
Oh my gosh.
One of the most memorable moments on Memphis TV. Of course, Jimmy was on his way to New York. He was on his way out, and went out with a bang there. What? Because your dad just on TV fired up, right? Was just say that's it. You're done. You know, just like suddenly felt like acting like he had all the authority in the world just to get rid of Jimmy.
I tell you, he was hot because Jimmy told me, said, "Hey Lance, I'm just gonna pinch a little bit of flour and just kind of sprinkle it on you." What did you know? They think it's funny, you know, doing stuff like that where they, you know, end up dumping the whole thing. Where Dad, he tells a story that he goes, me being a dummy, I go in the back and I go get in the shower. And of course, what happens when water hits flour? Yes. You know, it started caking on me everywhere. And I tell you, Dave, who was more mad about any of these things that happened was my mom, because. Oh. You know, Dad wore a suit every day on Saturday morning, and he would come home with blood stains on his suits, on his collar. You know, they'd be ripped sometimes because a couple of the guys would rip his pocket off. You know, of course, the flour incident was, you know, icing on the cake.
Yeah.
So, she was hot because he basically didn't get any reimbursement for any of the suits. And although he did do Baxter suit commercials, they only ever gave him one suit his entire time he did that.
So what did your mom think about wrestling? Was she a fan of wrestling?
She was not the biggest fan, to be honest with you, Dave. She realized that was his living and that's what he did. You know, she didn't like and Dad didn't like this about the wrestling business. There wasn't much loyalty. You know, and you know, if somebody says they're going to do something, they do it. In the wrestling business, it just didn't work that way. And Dad came again from being an executive, you know, working at RKA General for many, many years, you know, growing up in the business world. And you know, you did what you said you were going to do. And so she didn't like that aspect of it. He didn't like it either. But they both realized that this was the way he made his living. And they learned to deal with it.
Yeah. And Lance also saw and, you know, participated in the debut in the early years of Jim Cornette. Jim Cornette obviously thinks the world of Lance, right? Always talks about Lance and how important Lance was to, you know, his childhood and his fandom of wrestling. What did Lance think of Mr. Cornette?
Jim, he absolutely loved Jim Cornette. He thought he probably was the most improved out of any person that he's ever had to deal with. If you look at those early interviews with Cornette, I mean, Dad was basically like he did a lot of the green guys, you know, walk them through the interview and help them out and do what he could. And to show you the respect Jim had for Dad, we went to Charlotte. I can't remember the year. I want to say it was about 2015, maybe. For a fan fest over there, and the promoter of it wanted Dad to get up on stage and do a question and answer, and I told him, I said, hey, look, you know, he's having some difficulties remembering things and all that, and Cornette just happened to be standing there, and Cornette said, he says, man, I tell you what, I'll go up there with him and we'll do it together. And it was just perfect. Just like Dad helped him when he was younger, Jim Cornette helped Dad when he got older, and it just worked out perfectly.
Yeah. I mean, Jim's a great storyteller, so I can imagine. It was almost like, you know, roles reversed, right? Lance was getting to do the color commentary there. Chime in when he...
Hey, you know, something I wanted to ask, I was reading up about you, and I know you're a big movie horror fan. Am I correct in
that? I am, yeah.
Love, you know, horror movies. I'm only telling you this just because this is told you to show you about Dad, how creative his mind was for TV. He created back in the late 60s, early 70s, a program on WHBQ called fantastic features.
Oh, yeah.
And he went down. You need to go on YouTube and check the opening up. It's pretty cool. But he went out as program director and bought a bunch of these old, like, grade B scary movies, you know, that you see late at night. Well, that's exactly what he did. And he hired this guy in town. This is in Memphis, and who was named, his last name was Davis. So he switched it around. He called himself Savad, Savid. And he was the Munster of ceremonies for the Saturday night scary movie every Saturday night. Well, it was a huge hit in Memphis and the surrounding area. It was unbelievable.
That's another thing that's lost the time that I always loved, right? Each little area, region, whatever you call it, kind of had something like, right? Had a horror host like that.
Yeah.
And I was born and raised, grew up in Indiana, and we had Sammy Terry there. That was our horror host.
Okay.
When I was older, and you know, there was lots of those, you know, everywhere in the country.
Yeah. You know, another thing I like to tell about Dad is creativity on TV is that he came up with the idea of having a fishing show. And at that time, this was in 1968. And at that time, there was American Sportsman, but there wasn't really one person that really did a fishing show. Yeah. So he went to a local guy in town and said, "Hey, can I come out and film you and do your fish?" But you know who that guy was?
Who was that?
Bill Dance.
Oh, yeah.
And so, Bill, at Dad's funeral, he sent a wreath in. It said, "If it wasn't for Lance Russell, there wouldn't be a Bill Dance either."
Huh.
So, I only say to tell you this, just Dad just had such a creative mind about coming up with things for TV, you know, and that's why Jarrett really, and I guess it was what, 77, somewhere in there, when he hired him specifically to come to work for the wrestling company.
Yeah.
It was a tough time in the Russell household trying to make that decision whether to leave the, you know, the executive position at TV and just work strictly for the wrestling company. But he decided he was going to do it. And he gave Dad free rein on the TV and had him go around to different cities within the region, Lexington and Louisville, and secure local televisions to show the program up there. And so, it was great. It was a great move.
Yeah. Probably no coincidence at all. The next few years, several years after that, is what many people consider the prime of Memphis TV. And, you know, those late 70s, early 80s, into the mid 80s is, you know,
right.
some of the best Memphis TV there is when Lance, you know, had more of an impact, more of a, you know, a little more, you know, creativity into it, creative control into it.
Right. Exactly.
Who are some other guys that Lance enjoyed working with and being on camera with, like wrestling talent that he felt he really clicked with and out there and that came through Memphis?
Well, he loved Bill Dundee, Bill Superstar Dundee. He just, uh-huh. he thought the world of Bill, I know it's said a lot, but thought pound for pound, ounce for ounce, he was probably the toughest guy in the ring that he's ever seen. And Dad used to say, "Hey, if I'm ever in a bar and the bar fight breaks out, I'm definitely getting behind Bill Dundee because he'll take care of business." But yeah. Billy was great. Back before Billy, of course, Jackie Fargo. He loved working with Jackie Fargo. He just thought he was great. Had a great relationship with Sam Bass. I don't know if you remember Sam or not, Jerry Lawler's first manager Carter. With mm-hmm. Jim White.
Yep.
Loved Sam Bass. And then, you know, he knew all the guys, but it's not like he hung out with them all the time.
Yeah.
You know, he had life here with his, he had kids and wife that he had to get home to and all that. But, you know, he'd see him every Saturday, Monday night. Of course, he'd go out and have a few beers with them. You know, he kept his distance. Of course, they were traveling so much, Dave, you know. And Dad didn't do a lot of traveling. He did some, but he was mainly, you know, in Memphis Saturday and Monday night.
Yeah. Yeah. And he got to call, you know, particularly on those Monday nights, got to call some very big moments in professional wrestling. And I just want to throw out a couple and see what he may have said to you about them.
The first one that jumps to my mind is in 81, the empty arena match with Lawler and Funk, Terry Funk, which memorable for many parts, right? The match itself was memorable. Lance's call was memorable.
Yeah.
But I always have to chuckle that when the clip in the airing starts, the Lance with the cigarette thing.
Everybody remembers that, and it used to drive Dad crazy because he quit smoking right shortly after that. He gave it up cold turkey, but he regrets that actually. Dad's from the old school. He didn't like smoking going on, you know, like that. He didn't like cussing. He didn't like any of that kind of stuff. But he,
I think that's why it's so memorable, because it almost seemed jarring, right? To see Lance. I know they're probably trying to get a casual feel, right. whatever may happen kind of deal. I get, but it just almost seemed jarring to see Lance Russell doing that.
And it's funny. Everybody remembers that too. Your dad was smoking. I'm like, oh my God, he's turning over in his grave right now. He hates that.
What did he think of the empty arena match though? And did he think it was challenging to call that without the crowd and the noise and the feedback?
You know, I never specifically asked him that question, but if I did, I know what his answer would have been. He would have said no. I mean, dad was just such a professional. I tell people this day, dad is he was the best ad libber I've ever seen in my life. I've never seen him at a loss for words. And he did that empty arena match. Of course, that was Terry Funk's idea. Of course, it didn't sell squat, but it was great TV, but it didn't sell anything in the arena. It's funny, Terry Funk and Joe LeDuc, dad always used to say, those are two guys that I just never felt comfortable standing next to.
Yeah. Well, obviously, the famous moment with LeDuc where, cut his arm with the axe.
He hated that too.
But the empty arena, I would think Lance would have been pretty comfortable, right? Having a radio background and everything. And I've heard tell, actually, it might've been Cornette that I mostly heard tell this, that Lance had actually called some wrestling in different ways, non-television. And I think he even said maybe something later in WCW or something, on a hotline or something, where he didn't even, he wasn't actually calling the matches. He just knew the finishes and the times. And he was just ad-libbing the matches, from what he'd seen and what he knew, and like making the matchup.
Right.
And everything else. And then you wouldn't have known the difference.
Yeah. You know, he did that early on in his career. He told me this story about doing a baseball game that way one time. He was doing on a local station, and for some reason they couldn't pick it up where they were playing, but he picked it up on like another, I don't know, station, and he relayed it on what they were doing in the local station, play by play, every inning. So again, he was so good at just doing that, Dave. I tell you another one that got him a little mad at himself too, but I thought it gave so much realism to it, was the Tupelo concession stand brawl.
Yeah.
If you watch that match, they finish in the ring and dad goes, okay, we got to go. Time's running out. We got to go. Well, the screen goes black. And then all of a sudden you hear dad saying, Hey, Mike, which is the photographer. He goes, Hey, something's going on downstairs. Let's get the camera and go down and check it out. Well, they're trying to get down this rickety old staircase. He trips over wires and he cusses. Dad he hated that. He couldn't believe he said it. But I mean, that's what happened. That's what brought out the best in dad, where people believed it, man. I just thought it was one of his best pieces of work when it went black.
Yeah.
And he starts talking. And people believed it. I mean, it was just beautiful the way it went down.
Yeah. And it's been a while since I've seen it so many times, but it's been a while. If I remember correctly, even when they were going, right, when he's telling the cameraman to go, I think he even brings up, do you have enough cable? It's like he thought of all these things that maybe the viewer would question and threw it out there to cut off the concern before. And I mean, it was such a small thing, but it helped sell the realism of it.
Yes.
And it's, that you know, you talked about the art of the ad lib, and that's what it was. I mean, it was live television every week, and it's marvelous. You know, how, like I said, the impact of him being able to do that, to being able to ad lib, and how much, you know, how important that was to Memphis. And yeah. another big match he called at the Mid-South Coliseum, and we talked about the almost nearly kind of father-son like relationship between him and Jerry Lawler. So I would think there had to be multiple levels of pride, maybe even for Lance here. It was in 88 when Jerry Lawler won the AWA world title from Curt Hennig. And not, you know, because they had for so many years sold the ideal of Lawler chasing the world title.
Right.
In different promotions and whatnot. And in situations like that, did Lance appreciate in the moment the importance of what he was calling? And I know he understood it, or was it more of a, because it was just his job, was it more of a, oh, you know, this is, I'm calling a match. It's a big match. Yeah. But you know what? It's like any other match for me. I'm going to do it the right way. And that's it. Or did, you know, did he ever take a moment to let it sink in that, you know, this was a little bit bigger than the others?
No, he knew it was bigger than the others. And he wanted that portrayed in his voice and on TV when he was doing it. I mean, he would get pumped up for this. I mean, you know, he changed his whole attire. You know, he'd wear tuxedos down to the match, you know, those big matches like that. And he definitely, I think, would call them differently. You could listen to him calling just a regular Monday night match between, you know, Bill Dundee and Jerry Lawler. But when it was Curt Hennig or Jack Briscoe or Harley Race, you know, that came into town for the World Heavyweight Champion, you could tell there was a difference. And I think the fans knew that, and they could feel it in his voice and in the way he presented himself.
Yeah, I do too. And it's, you know, it's almost like, it's hard to describe, right? Because it's like he called every match like it was important, but you could just tell, right? He knew how, just, it's just, I can't, you can't even describe. It's just certain little things, little different inflections in the voice or whatever it may be, that he knew how to just to take it up another notch. And exactly. I mean, I think all your, whatever sport it might be, all your good broadcasters and announcers, whatever, they should, you know, they know how to do that. The great ones. And that's their job. And we, you know, we spoke of it earlier, right, about several times about how Lance and Dave Brown brought this sense of seriousness to wrestling, right? And it's very wacky world, particularly in Memphis. Right. It was real, sometimes very wacky. Yeah. And with some of the monsters and different things. It always, as a fan, it always just struck me that was just Lance, though. Right. That was his, you know, this professional, you know, the way of presenting himself in the product and everything else. So, but did he consciously think about sometimes needing to be the balance to this wildness, or was it just natural for him? And that's just the way it came out.
That's a great question. And I'm telling you, I never asked him that, but to me, that's just the way he came out. I mean, I live with the guy, and he, you know, and we would argue and do whatever else, but that's just the way he was all the time.
Yeah.
You know, he was just so cool and calm, and again, never at a loss. And that's just the way he was. He was just great at it.
Yeah, it's almost like he knew the more wacky it got, the more that he needed to calm down more and even more. Yeah. To but it's like, it just, you know, I think it was just an instinct he had, right? He just knew, right? That everything couldn't be screaming and over the top, or you would just lose the effectiveness.
Exactly. They needed that calmness. And he knew that he and Dave were basically the support group, because the stars were the guys in the ring. They were the ones that were battling it out, and they wanted to call the matches. Now, yes, there were times when they got Dad involved in some things. You know, a couple of times Dad, he didn't like to do it, but he did it. They wanted him to be a special referee, you know, to put the referee shirt on and get in the ring. That was early on.
Yeah.
When he could get out of the ring pretty quick, but he, you know, he didn't like those stunts that he did. He wouldn't back away from it, that's for sure. But he wanted the focus to be on the guys in the ring and let Dave and he call the action and build the excitement up for Monday night or or Tuesday night in Louisville, or Wednesday night in Evansville, or wherever it might be.
Yeah, and you mentioned it earlier, how so many people have said over the years that, you know, Lance and Dave were just like, they were like uncles, that they were just sitting around watching wrestling with. And they were like family, right? From all these Saturdays of watching with them, you know, and they trusted them and they felt comfortable and everything else. And I think that it plays into that same thing. I always thought, I always just felt that was just Lance, right? No matter what, that wasn't an act. That if you ran into Lance at the gas station or the grocery store, he would approach you know, the same way. That and this, you would get that same warm feeling and kind feeling from him if you were to approach him in those settings. That I just, and again, I know, you know, he's your dad, maybe you're a little biased, but I always just felt like Lance was just such a warm and kind and genuinely nice and humble person.
Yeah, you know, he was until he got mad at me for not cutting the yard or taking the garbage out.
Well, yeah.
But no, I tell you, Dave, when I go around and people come up to me and they tell me all this, and you know, the fans especially just say, God, your dad was just the nicest guy. You know, I met him here and there, and he was just so down to earth. He was just talking to me like, you know, I was just his best buddy. I'm like, well, that's dad. And then when I talked to some of the old wrestlers, you know, I can't remember who it was. I was in Jackson, Tennessee for that Memphis Hall of Fame with somebody, and I can't think who it was. Oh, I think it was Tony Falk. He came up to me and we were talking, and he goes, you know, your dad was the nicest guy. As a matter of fact, I don't know if I've ever met anybody in the wrestling business that there has never been anybody to say a bad word about him.
Yeah.
Said, your dad was just a great guy. I go, yeah, well, I have to agree with you, Tony.
Yeah. So, well, and you mentioned earlier, right, with the banana nose thing that you heard some of that when you were in middle school because right. And everything else. But did Lance ever talk to you? What if someone approached you when you were a kid or whatever, and maybe, you know, made fun of you or gave you a hard time because your dad was involved in wrestling and maybe ridiculed wrestling or called it fake or did whatever, because, you know, that was a thing. Did he ever say, you know, this is how you should handle that situation, this is what you should do, be the bigger man? You know, did that ever even come up in your life?
It did, actually. It's amazing you bring that up, because I can remember I would, you know, I'd come back to dad and go, oh, my God, you know, the guys, you know, they're really ribbing me about, you know, it's all fake. You know, your dad's doing, this is all fake stuff. And I go, Dad, what do you say? What do you come back to that? And Dad always used to say, he just would say, you know, for those who believe, no explanation is necessary. For those who don't, none will do. Yeah. And I know it went over the head of a lot of my friends, but I heard him say that a lot. You know, he'd get some drunk guy or somebody saying something to him, and, you know, wherever, and he'd just call me. He'd just turn around and say, hey, that's it, and just go about his business. You know, he wouldn't confront anybody. And so I did the same. I just wouldn't confront anybody. I go, hey, that's what you believe. That's fine.
Yeah. I think everybody as a wrestling fan, you know, has encountered those people in their life. And he's exactly right. Right. If they're dead set that this is what it is, and they got these opinions, nothing you're going to say is going to change your mind. So why even engage? I mean, it doesn't do any good. And,
you know, something funny about Dad, you know, in his later life, Dad, again, such old school. He was kayfabe till the day he died, I think. You know, he'd come up to me and he'd say, hey, I'm going to tell you something about what happened. He goes, no, you can't tell anybody. I mean, this is like 40 years ago. I'm like, Dad, who am I going to tell? I said, Dad, I think I already know, you know, all that kind of stuff. And he was so funny. Hey, you can't tell anybody, okay?
Yeah, he wasn't going to let them be, no matter if it was curtain was down or not, he wasn't going to be the one to.
No, not at all. And we talked about it. You know, there was some talk about doing a book. Mark James was going to do a book about him.
Yeah.
And he was, we were one day, one weekend, we were coming home from Memphis and driving, and he would tell these stories. And I go, Dad, those are great stories. You got to tell those in the book. I said, no, I can't tell that story. No way. I can't let that get out. I'm like, Dad, come on. This is what people want to hear. They want to know the inside scoop on some of this stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So, kayfabe to the day he died, though, Dave.
Yeah, you got to respect that, though. I'm telling you,
And well, and late in his career, he had a run, worked for WCW, and
Yes.
how did he enjoy his time there? And what did he feel going from doing, all those years doing the live TV on Saturday mornings to all of a sudden doing, pre-tape type shows and taping everything? Did he care? Did he have an opinion of it, or was it he was so entrenched in TV and everything that he just rolled right with it?
Well, I tell you, I give you the long version of this. I get asked this question a lot about, hey, why did your dad leave and go to WCW? And I say, well, there's the two biggest reasons. One, he wanted to test his skills on the big stage, nationwide stage, and then the other is money. I mean, simple of fact, money. They were throwing out money like you couldn't believe. I know you've seen the reports about what they were paying people in WCW. But he went up there and he was so excited to get up there and do some work. And then when he realized they were not going to use him the way they should have used him, he started to get a little depressed. He put up with it for, I don't know, a couple of years, 2, 3 years, and finally it got to the point where he just said, this is not what I anticipated. And again, they did not use him correctly. They didn't use him right. And but hey, they put him in charge of the 900 number. They made a bunch of money off of that. And this was a 900 number for wrestling, not another kind of 900 number.
There you go.
But and he enjoyed his time up there, but he had enough of it, and it was time to come home and do other things.
And well, and he retired around 97, and he's been inducted in all kinds of Hall of Fames, right? He was the Wrestling Observer Best Television Announcer from 84 to 87. And when people discuss the greatest wrestling announcers of all time, they're usually the debate, it boils down. Of course, it depends on, where you're from, because back then everything was regional, right? And everybody liked their local guy. But when you talk in the grand scheme, right, it usually breaks down to Lance Russell, Gordon Solie, or Jim Ross, right? That's your big three, at least a lot of people's minds, in my mind. Did what was Lance's relationship like with those guys? And everything. Was there a competitiveness at all between them, or was that just something in retrospect that fans have just kind of created?
Yeah, I think it was just fans created. Dad didn't have any animosity for any of those guys. He actually he liked JR. He thought JR was a great guy, and JR had a lot of respect for Dad. We saw him in Charlotte. We also saw him in Las Vegas for the Cauliflower Alley Club, and just they just had a great time talking to one another. Gordon and Dad worked briefly when Gordon came down to Memphis. And it was really kind of weird seeing Dad and Gordon at the same desk on Saturday morning there. But no, they shared stories, and I think Dad joked with Gordon that he says, "Hey, Gordon, how come you get the dean of wrestling when I started a year before you did announcing wrestling?" And so he joked with him about that. I tell you, a guy that he really loved was Bob Carl. He and Bob were good friends.
Now, him and
My
Bob
mom,
worked a lot together in WCW, I believe.
right, exactly. He and my mom and Bob and his wife, they used to get together, from time to time. But he really respected Bob, and I think Bob did too with Dad. But no, Dad loved all the guys. He never had a bad thing to say about any of them. But loved JR. Knew Gordon, didn't know him well, but very respected him for what he did. And in the Florida territory and in Georgia. So yeah, nothing bad there.
And again, it's like everybody had their favorites based on where they grew up at that time, right? In the territory days. And the
I
guys that
love
loved
the
Gordon.
I love that the, you know, they always say, well, what's the Mount Rushmore of wrestling announcers? And I think most people agree that it's Gordon, JR, and Dad. And then who you want to put up there next, whether it's Schiavone or Michael Cole or Bob Caudle or Mick Karch. Isn't that his name? Mick Karch, I think.
From
He was
Minnesota.
the guy that you grew up with, where you were in Indiana, right?
Yeah. In Indiana. Well, through the 70s into the early 80s, it was Sam Miniker. And then in the last few years in the 80s and stuff, it was Dave McLean, who went on to found, you know, Glow Wrestling and all that later. But he was our guy in the mid 80s on.
Yeah.
But actually in the last few years of when they kind of regrouped and Bruiser kind of sold it off and regrouped, it was Terry Sullivan who used to call Detroit back in the 70s. Yeah, so you know, so it's like all these guys, you know, were big, you know, big in mind, and yeah, there's a couple of those I don't hold as I would think are great, but I mean I love Sam Miniker, and that's just because, again, I watched so much of him, and I've watched so much, you know, so many tapes and everything else too, even back before I watched of him, and so it's, you know, again, it's such a regional thing, right? I mean, with a lot of these guys, because you know, wherever you grew up, you know, that's who you watched, and there's a nostalgia to it.
Yeah. Yeah. One thing about Memphis wrestling, and I don't know this answer, maybe you can answer, but I think what's so unique about Memphis was that the program on Saturday morning was live. I don't know if the other territories or regions did that or not, but
not most of them. No. I mean, Indianapolis was never Indianapolis. Well, Indianapolis was like way back, you know, like in the late early, you know, late 60s, early 70s, when, you know, they couldn't do that. But then Bruiser ended up he pretty much just taped arena shows, and they chopped it up and with the interviews and stuff. But a lot of them were not live, but I did, I mean, I did have the advantage of, I got to see a lot of your dad, because where I grew up in Indiana was pretty central. So we were seeing, we did get to see the Memphis wrestling stuff out of Louisville that aired in Louisville. Cause we could pick that up where I was. So, that was
when, you know, familiar with Cambridge City, Indiana.
I've heard of it, but I'm not.
I don't know if you were anywhere near there. The company I work for and have since retired from, we put a big warehouse in Cambridge City. And I think it's just west of Indianapolis. I mean, east of Indianapolis, just off of 70 there.
Yeah, yeah. No, I was originally from Columbus, which is about 40, 45 minutes south of Indianapolis. We were about midway between Indianapolis and Louisville, and about almost the same difference to Cincinnati. We were kind of pretty central to all three of those. So, so that's, you know, kind of an advantage. But like I said, we got Indianapolis stuff, and then we could get some of the Louisville stuff and stuff. So
you were Dick Bruiser territory then.
I was. Yep. Yeah, that's
Great. I love Dick the Bruiser.
Yeah. Still do. Everybody, even in Indiana, you run into people, especially when I was a kid, everybody had the Dick the Bruiser story. And
I loved it when he came down to Memphis, what was it? 70, I want to say 77, maybe, when Lawler was making his run against Jack Briscoe, and Jarrett brought in one guy after another, Bobo Brazil and Ricky Gibson and the Sheik. And then he brought in Dick the Bruiser, and what a great run that was. And finally facing Jack Briscoe. Oh my gosh.
Yep. Yep. Yeah, a few years ago, I talked to Jerry Jarrett, interviewed Jerry Jarrett, and all we talked about, the only thing, because I know, you know, it's like, how do you can't talk to Jerry Jarrett about everything, right? You'd be there for hours. And so I just told him, I just wanted to talk to him about his stuff with Dick the Bruiser, his interactions with Dick the Bruiser from when he was in Memphis, and then dealing with him when, you know, he took over Louisville, because Bruiser, quote unquote, said it was his town, even though he hadn't been there for years. And then in 82, Jerry came up and helped Bruiser in Indiana when Bruiser was about to go out of business. Wow. And then that kind of fell apart really quick. So he had lots of stories about Dick the Bruiser. And so that's what I talked to him about. But I'm a Dick the Bruiser fan.
Wow. So, hey, you mentioned 82, and I my year could be off, but I think that was the year of Andy Kaufman. When he came to town.
This would have been around then. This he never did the Indiana, you know, anything in Indiana, but the guys getting sent to Indiana were not, you know, like Lawler wasn't coming to Indiana and stuff like that. It was the biggest name that came up from Indiana, you know, through Indiana, was like Kamala when they were just debuting him. He came up a lot and stuff, but the primary thing when they worked together was it all centered around the tag team from Indiana, Spike Huber, Steve Regal, and then they were wrestling the New York Dolls a lot.
All right.
you know, Troy Graham and Rick McGraw, whatever. So there was a lot of that. And again, it was so weird because at one time that Dick the Bruiser's tag titles were on for several weeks. We're on Memphis TV because the Dolls held them. And it was so weird to hear Jimmy Hart talk about the WWA. It was just, it was so odd.
Huh.
But you mentioned a little about having Lance as a dad. So yeah. what was he like then, right? I mean, because, you know, like you said, he had to get on to you about things like any father would. But sure. when he got on to you, did he use that Lance, the Lanceisms, and some of the Lance like, oh, Shane, you know?
Hey, he'd say, hey, you know, I try to talk back. Hey, don't give me that smart stuff now, okay? And then when I got too Audrey, he'd yell, hey, can we get some help in there, Audrey? So, no, yeah. I'm kidding you on that one. But no, Dad was just great. I tell you, I was a big sports guy, and he coached me. He coached me in basketball and baseball, and wow. Taught me how to play golf and fish, although I'm not any good at that either. But he was just a great, great guy, great person, great dad. And golly, I can't say enough good things about him. You know, he had a great time. We went to, if I'm going too long, let me know, Dave.
No, you're good. You're good. Go ahead.
We, in 2015, I believe it was, we went to Las Vegas for the Cauliflower Alley Club. They gave him an award. So he said, you know what? My mom had already passed. And he said, I want to take the family out there. So he took my brother and my sister, and me and him. And we all went out there to Las Vegas and just had a big family affair out there. And got to get him, give him this award, which he was so nervous about, because he got to pick somebody, Dave, to introduce him.
Uh-huh.
And first words out of his mouth was Jerry Lawler. You think Jerry would do it, Shane? I go, well, I'm sure he would if he could do it. Well, you know, he's busy. He probably won't have time to do it. So let's call it. So we called him up. Jerry Lawler said, when is it? He said, he gave him the date. He goes, put it down. I'll be there. Jerry did the exact same thing when Dad passed away. I called Jerry up. I said, Jerry, I said, Dad, I want to have Dad's funeral at 11 o'clock on Saturday morning, just like every Saturday morning. Mm-hmm. I said, I'd love for you to be there. And he goes, gosh, Lee Shane, I've got the New York Comic Con I got to go to. He goes, but I tell you what, I will be there. Don't worry about it. Book. I said, okay. So I had Jerry Lawler and Dave Brown say a few things at Dad's funeral. And again, it just shows the relationship that, you know, yeah. Jerry and my dad had. It was just great. And of course, Dave Brown's always been that way. He's just a great guy.
Yeah. Well, and like, you know, growing up though, when did it hit you that your dad was the voice of Memphis wrestling, that he was this television star? when did that sink in?
You know, I used to watch him on TV as a kid, you know, probably 6, 7 years old. I watch him on TV. And there's maybe a couple of years later, I noticed we would go out to eat dinner and people would come up and say, hey, Lance, can I get your autograph? And, you know, I started thinking about that. I'm thinking, wait a minute, I want your autograph. and that's when it really kind of hit me that, hey, wait a minute now, he's known in town. You know, then we'd be driving around town. Dad would get pulled over for a speeding ticket, and he'd get out of a speeding ticket because he was Lance Russell. I'm like, oh, my God. He really is something in this town. And, so it was pretty early on, Dave, that I realized that, you know, Dad had a name in town. And to this day, you can't go in Memphis, Tennessee without talking about. You mentioned Lance Russell and people's faces light up. I go somewhere and they'll tell me they're from Memphis. I go, just a bit of trivia. My dad was Lance Russell. They'll look at me like, oh my God, Lance Russell, are you kidding me?
Yeah, I go, not bad.
So it's just like Jerry Lawler. It's a household name in Memphis. And
absolutely.
Yeah, he was something though.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Shane, let's wrap this up. Like I said, I think we could talk forever about your dad. And
sure.
May have to have you on again another time and talk more about him, or maybe talk more about, you know, something in specific, you know, a specific incident or happening or whatever. But like, you know, you're doing these kind of things, right? You're out there keeping your father's helping keep your father's legacy alive, right? You're doing some appearances and you do interviews like this and podcast appearances and things. Is there a way that fans can follow either you or something to kind of know what's going on and if there's anything new developing with your father or something? Because I know, you know, there's always stuff in Memphis and things happening. Is there a way that they can, you know, keep track of these things and follow you?
Yeah, you know, a lot of them, but the ones I do, I really enjoy. The best way is just, I'm on Facebook, just Shane Russell. You'll see my picture with my two daughters. And once you go to the page, there's a picture of Dave Brown and Lance Russell and me. We're sitting right in the middle of them. And I usually have on there where I'm going to be, like coming up March 15th, I'll be in Tupelo, Mississippi, for an event down there. You know, just, yeah, that's the best way to do it. I don't do too many because I'm down here in Pensacola, and I'm sure if I was up in Memphis, I'd do a lot more. But I love to do it. I love to talk Lance Russell. You know, I go to these Comic Cons or events, and I have a table, but I have a lot of dad's memorabilia, you know, people can look at, and, you know, just books and scrapbooks and belts and trophies he's won and just things like that. And I just love to sit there and talk about Lance Russell and what he did for the business and how important he was to the Memphis territory.
Yeah. And, you know, I've talked to several children of, you know, wrestlers or announcers, you know, through the years and whatnot. And I'll tell you the same thing I've told every single one of them. You know, I appreciate, and I thank you for sharing your father with us, you know, all Memphis and all the wrestling fans that, you know, we whether we call him Uncle Lance or whatever else, you know, I thought of him that way. You know, it's, you know, you shared him with us, and you know, and I appreciate that, and I hope, like you said, from doing these appearances and talking to all these people, I hope you know how much the wrestling world, you know, truly did love and appreciate your dad, and I hope you know, constantly get reminded of that for the rest of your life, because it's that's how important Lance was. So.
Wow. Well, thanks, Dave. I really appreciate that. And that just really touches my heart, because that's really why I do it. I just want to, you know, make sure people know how much, especially the fans. Dad appreciated the fans so much, and he loved what he did, and he was just a great guy, and I appreciate all the love and warmth that I receive everywhere I go. But Dave, thank you so much for having me. It was great. I love talking Lance Russell, Memphis wrestling, and hopefully we can do it again one time.
Hey, you bums, we have to take a quick break.
Hey guys, Ray Russell here, curator of the WrestleCopia Podcast Network, inviting you guys to listen to many of the programs here as part of the WrestleCopia brand, including, but not limited to, the Wrestling Memory Grenade, currently covering the 1988 and the WWF project. You can also listen to the Regional Wrestling Podcast, where we talk the territories, whether it's Jamie Ward with Georgia 81, Roman Gomez with the UWF in 1986, or Gene Jackson covering Memphis in 85. Three projects going on right now over there at Regional Wrestling. You can also listen to the Wrestling Stoop with the legend himself, Bob Roop. Bob goes back in time each and every week, covering not just his career, but countless stories and interactions with hundreds of wrestling names spanning his two decades in the business. But that's not all. You can also check out the Puro Wrestling Academy with the professor of Puro Resu, Mr. Dan Ginnity. Dan and I go back in time and cover the history of Japanese professional wrestling in the English language. And you can listen to all of those shows and more, all part of the WrestleCopia Podcast Network, located over at WrestleCopia.com. That's WrestleCopia.com, and anywhere your podcast streaming needs are met, from Apple to Spotify, Pocket Cast, and beyond. And while you're at it, why not subscribe to our social media guys for all the latest goings on here at the WrestleCopia Podcast Network? Plus, I'm constantly adding old school video clips and pictures from throughout wrestling history. You can follow us over on X, formerly Twitter, at Wrestling Grenade. That's at R-A-S-S-L-I-N Grenade. Also, follow and like me, Facebook.com/Wrestling Grenade. And why not subscribe to YouTube.com/Wrestling Grenade? So if you're looking to support that next up-and-coming podcast brand, please consider making it WrestleCopia.
Thank you. Hey, it's Bob Smith, and guess what? The outdated Wrestling Hour is now part of the WrestleCopia Podcast Network. But hey, no fear, you're still going to hear the unique guests, comedy, music, authors, journalists, funny people. Who knows who's going to end up on the outdated Wrestling Hour? Remember, it's all new and all old. So check it out in the WrestleCopia Podcast Network and wherever you get your podcasts. Listen if you know what's good for you.
Hey everybody, Gene Jackson here, inviting you to check out the Retro Wrestling Review, where each week I'm joined by some great co-hosts who help me review classic episodes of USWA Championship Wrestling, and right now we are doing week-by-week reviews of 1993. But we don't just do reviews, sometimes we get a chance to interview some of the people who were there and lived it, plus do watch-alongs. It's a lot of fun, so check out new episodes that drop every Wednesday at WrestleCopia.com. And to find links to everything associated to the podcast, you can go to uswapodcast.com.
We're back on Wrestling Nostalgia.
All right, and thank you to Shane Russell for coming on and joining me and discussing his father, Lance Russell. What a great conversation. Lance was such a great announcer, such a great man. And, you know, Shane, man, if you listen to the interview, you can hear Lance's voice in Shane's voice, right? I get there's a lot of similarities there, Shane. You sound a little like your dad. I like that. But yeah, we'll have Shane on again in the future, talk some more Memphis wrestling. But for now, make sure you follow me on social media. I'm on pretty much any platform. All you got to do is look up Nostalgic Dave Dynasty or just The Dave Dynasty, all one word. And also, go check out all of the WrestleCopia network of podcasts. The shows are all fun listens that shine a light on wrestling history. You can look them up on your preferred podcast platform or go to WrestleCopia.com. Also, be sure to check out my friends at the Ultimate Classic Wrestling Library. Go to ClassicWrestling.net, or you can download the Ultimate Classic Wrestling app on all of your smart devices. Now, like I mentioned earlier, next episode, good or bad, my guest will be Flying Fred Curry. Not the interview, but the quality. Whether I'm going to get it as good as I can, and we're just going to go with that. So I don't think it'll be perfect, guys, but I hope you will overlook some of it for the content. I talked to Fred about his legendary career, as well as his father, Wild Bill Curry. Now, again, there are some connection issues with Fred in the call and things that might sound a little off in this interview. The funny thing is, for whatever reason, the issues in the static and things are on. They're on my side. It's weird. I don't know how that happened. It has happened with no other interview I've done, but for some reason is this. Now, I will say this one was a computer to phone interview. Fred was on the phone. Sometimes those don't, you lose a little quality, but I've never had this issue, but it's odd. But anyway, none of the issues are really with Fred. You can hear Fred. So that's a good thing, right? That's what we want to do. We want to hear Flying Fred. So maybe, maybe it's not a bad thing. You get to hear a little less of me, a little more of him, but I will clean it up the best I can, and it will be out next week. What a great interview. Fred's 81 years old, great stories to tell, just an absolute hero of mine. I've always been such a fan of Flying Fred Curry, and this is great. I was so honored to meet him, I have met him, and I was honored to meet him, but I mean, I'm so honored to talk to him and have him on the show, and it was such a blast, and I hope to talk to Fred again in the future. Thank you to all of the listeners and supporters for all your follows and interactions, for supporting me here on Wrestling Nostalgia, and for supporting the WrestleCopia network of podcasts. Guys, these are all good dudes, all good shows, just great content. So I'm proud to be a part of that network. All right, guys, I'm going to get out of here until next episode, when we will have Flying Fred Curry on. Wherever you go or whatever you do, be good, be safe, and always keep on growing.
Fans, we brought you All-Star Championship Wrestling. This is Sam Manager thanking you for being with us and saying until next time, so long, everyone.
Wrestling Nostalgia, copyright Dave Dynasty, Bruiser voice done by John Lawson.